Maintenant, on va inviter Professeur Chen, qui est de China Executive Leadership Academy à Pudong. C'est une l'école qui est partie du Parti central, donc Parti de l'État, c'est pareil en Chine. Donc c'est équivalent de l'ENA en France ou comme l'ENAP chez nous. Donc c'est une école qui pour former les hauts fonctionnaires. Donc, Monsieur Chen qui va nous parler tout de suite, deuxième plan quinquennat. Ok, on va céder la parole tout de suite à Monsieur Chen.
Many thanks to Professor Lin. It's my honor to give a presentation about China's 12th Five Plan, Future Prospects and Business Environment. And there are four sections. First, I will give a summary about China, especially for the past 30 years of China. Since the establishment of the People's Republic of China in 1949, China started its first five-year plan in 1956. At that time, China learned a lot from the Soviet Union. Well, since 1978, China entering into its reform and opening up area, and great achievements have been made. Since 1978, great changes. In the 1978, people used quarter to exchange for commodities. At that time, money is not very important. Well, now we can buy anything we like in the supermarket. Well, in the 1978, everybody wear the same clothes. Well, now we can have our own style and personality. CELEP is located in Shanghai Pudong district. These pictures show the changes of Shanghai Pudong in the 30 or almost 40 years. And as a transnational economy and a society, China is experiencing multiple transitions in the reform area from a traditional agrarian society to an industrial country. From a rural to urban, from a planned and to a market-based economy. Well, we have from the GDP growth at average growth rate during 1979 to 2008, that is the 9.5%. These two lines are comparison of China and the average of the world. We can find these two curves look similar, where China did better than the average level of the world. And also, foreign trade has increased a lot from 20.6 billion in 1978 to US dollars 2.97 trillion in 2010. This average growth rate is over 17%. In the year 2011, the figure is 3.6 trillion, exceeding USA. Also, due to the continuous increase of trade surplus and high investment growth, China's foreign exchange reserve is rising exponentially. By the end of 2010, a national foreign exchange reserve increased to 2.8 trillion. It's quite a lot of money, but also caused some trouble. Thus, past 30 years, China experienced its rapid urbanization. In the year 2007, the urbanization rate is almost 45%. And now Canada is almost 80%. So China has its potential to increase its urbanization rate. And this is some figures about industry structure. First industry, almost agriculture. Second industry, almost the manufacturing factories industries. And the third industry, almost the service industry. We can find the second industry is quite stable. In the 1978, in China, it is almost 48%, while in the 2010, it is still almost 47%. Well, great changes in the first industry. First industry have decreased from 28% to 10%, while the service industry has increased from almost 24% to almost 43%. Compared with other countries, Canada have already been the contribution from the third industry has already been almost 80%. So China still have a potential to increase, especially the service industry. We confirm China's economy has have a character that is export oriented, and now China has become a global workshop. Although it's a low profit and most of the products are low value added, and also we confirm China's economy is investment focused, investment in infrastructure and high railway equipment, etc. So. From 1978 to 2012, we confirm the economy have gradually changed from a planned economy to a market economy. And the GDP-driven force were gradually changed from export-driven to investment-driven. And now we are emphasized much about the domestic consumption pool. So the ideologically, people's ideology also changed from close-minded and then open-minded and now much more democratic. So what's the challenges and the future of China's business environment? We confirm the characteristic of growth drivers in the past 30 years can be summarized as a scale dividend. Growth drivers both exogenous growth and endogenous growth. From an exogenous perspective, we can find China benefited a lot from institutional changes, especially its market reform and globalization, which expanded China's productivity possibility frontier and market demand. On the other hand, from the endogenous perspective, we can find China benefit a lot from demographic dividends. Chinese people are hardworking and they save money. So high saving rate and cheap and sufficient labor, which ensure there are plenty of cheap capital and cheap labor supply. So this can be so-called scale dividends. So what's the next 30 years, how will it be? I think the next 30 years will not be an exploration of the past, but rather a new area with new characteristics. China will gradually change from a very fast rate back to a moderately fast rate, although it is still very high. And China wants to not only benefit from scale dividend, China wants to benefit more from productivity dividend. So, China's economy has experienced its high growth phase and now is entering into a new phase that will be healthier, more balanced, and more sustainable. And there's a basic judgment that is China is likely to maintain a relatively high growth in next 10 to 15 years. We still have sufficient factors to drive this rapid economic growth, like large population, labor force, and vast domestic market. And the regional capacity means inland areas is to be developed. And also we can find the market mechanism can drive people for wealth. And the political incentives also does work. Local governments and officials are still they are enthusiastic for economic performance. And urbanization can integrate rural population and urban population. And the public service facilities can also work. Now, what's the challenges to China? We can find China's population will be aging. From year 1980 to year 2010, we can find working age population growth has outpaced total population growth. That means abundant labor resources and a low dependency ratio generated a demographic dividend. From 2000 on, growth of a working age population has declined and will drop to zero in the year 2015. There's a prediction that in the year 2040, although it is 20 or 30 years later, in the year 2040, each five people, there is one person who is elder than 65 years old. So China's population will be aging. Also, we can find demographic dividend will be gradually diminishing. Dependency ratio has reached its lowest point in the 2010 and will now increase. So demographic dividend diminishing implies a slowing of labor supply growth, increased labor cost, and increased household expenditure, and decreased saving rate and capital formation, which essentially means the growth model characterized by low consumption and high investment supported by cheap labor will change. Still, we can find that China's urbanization is still goes on. Well, the urbanization rate increased from almost 18% in 1978 to almost 45% in 2007, and now it's almost 50%. But we can find the migrant workers as the percentage of total urban employment rose significantly. But beginning in 2005, this growth rate has slowed. Although there are more migrant workers into the cities, but the growth rate has slowed. Urbanization will decelerate gradually. According to the report published by China Academy of Social Science, urbanization will decelerate in the future, with average increase of almost 1 percentage point every year, instead of 1.35 to 1.45 percentage points of the past 10 years. This means deceleration will imply massive fixed asset investment and infrastructure construction will slow, including road, railway, housing industry, building materials, auto, telecom. This is likely to curb the demand of investment in the future. And we can find China has already become an export-dependent economy. China's export share of the world trade volume have increased dramatically during the past 30 years. In the year 2009, China export share of the world trade volume almost 70.6%. Well, since the year 2008, the world financial crisis happened, we can find China export against its GDP have a big drop in the year 2008 and 2009, a big drop. We can find the imbalance in the world economy. Emerging economies like China, they are facing the challenges of trade surplus, foreign reserve, excess liquidity with inflation pressure and excess bubble. On the other hand, developed economies like USA, they are facing the challenges of overconsumption, high leverage, and financial deficits. So there will be a painful global rebalancing. The imbalance doesn't imply an end to globalization, rather a new equilibrium between the emerging economies and the developed economies will generate a new round of globalization dividend. This rebalancing requires the collaboration between the emerging economies and developed economies. For China, it will be difficult to maintain an export-dependent model. Instead, it should base its growth on its own market. So, in the next 30 years, China tries to benefit or to pursue productivity dividend. We can find the market reform and opening up has been a vital drive for China's economic growth. The rural reform in 1980s boosted the agricultural industry. In 1990s, the SOE reform energized the industry development. And in the year 2000, China entered into the WTO, the Made in China went global. So the theme for the next 30 years is to achieve endogenous growth through improvement of human capital, technical innovation, including resources utilization, and the upgrading of industry structure from low value added to high value added. So this is China's innovation strategy is highly relevant to the productivity dividend. Many countries have their national innovation strategy. USA, a framework for revitalizing American manufacturing in the year 2009, and we found Canada in 2002 have its national innovation strategy. Also, Quebec province have its view about innovation from its provincial level. In the year 2006, China initiated and announced its national long and middle plan for science and technology development. China set up the target of strengthening the indigenous innovation capacity and try to build up its innovation-oriented country. China wants to be an innovation-oriented country in the year 2020. This is an analysis from the Global Competitive Report. China has a well-developed innovation system compared with other BRIC countries, compared with Brazil, India, Russia, and South Africa. China is the top ranking among the BRICs. In the 2012, Canada ranked the 12th, where mainland ranked the 34th. This is the Chinese innovation policy institutions. China have its state steering committee of science and technology and education. And the Premier Wen Jiabao is the team leader of this committee. And also many ministries are relevant to the Chinese innovation policy institutions. For example, National Development and Reform Commission, they are responsible to design and implement a five-year plan. And also, Ministry of Commerce responsible for the tax relief policies. And the Minister of Finance, their innovation funds. And especially Ministry of Science and Technology, that is most. They have a financial support, support the basic research. They also support the technology transfer program. And also they support the promoting science parks and incubators. Quebec province have cooperation agreement with the most. They may co-funding some projects. And we have found that the investment in R&D is, since the year 2000, the growth rate of R&D investment in China has remained higher than that of the GDP growth. Average annual growth rate, that is 20%. In the year 2010, in the context of a global financial crisis, the R&D investment growth was 26%, accounting for 1.72% of the GDP. Although compared with other OECD countries, it is still low. But among the nations with per capita GDP lower than $4,000, this percentage is the highest. Also, great achievements have been made in the basic research. In the year 2009, according to the SCI statistic, this SCI papers, China has ranked the second in the world. From the entrepreneurs' view, they are more interested about how to combine the innovation and the economy. So, since the late 1980s, China started building high-tech industry parks. Now, there are 88 national high-tech zones. Well, what's the current status of these new high-tech zones in China? These high-tech zones have become a model for combining science and technology development with economic growth. We can find in the year 2010, they are the active drivers for economic development. In the year 2010, these 88 high-tech zones contribute 8% GDP of total national domestic GDP. So this is China's innovation strategy. At last, I want to talk something about China's 12-5 plan and the business environment. What's special about the 12-5-year plan? We can find in the 10th five-year plan from year 2001 to 2005, China's rapid growth via investment in core industries, investment in infrastructures, and is still export promotion oriented. Well, in the year 11th five-year plan, from year 2006 to 2010, we can find China liberalization of the financial sectors, some reforms in the financial sectors, and also China emphasized indigenous innovation, and still more export promotion. And China emphasized the importance of investment in harmonious society. Well, in the 12th five-year plan from 2011 to 2015, we can find China focused on the inclusive growth. That means economic growth downplayed. That means structural and social welfare issues emphasized. Just like Vice Premier Li Keqiang said, the transformation of the economic growth pattern is a comprehensive and profound change. It involves new ideas and innovative approaches. We must accelerate reform and opening up in order to achieve it. So what's the strategic priorities of China's 12th five-year plan? As an abbreviation, that is REACH, R-I-C-H, R, that is the region. That is the regional balance between the different areas, the rural and urban, coastal areas, and inland. And the industry, that means the traditional industry wants to be upgraded, and China encourages strategic emerging industry and the service industry, and etc. And C, that is the consumption. And now, China's economy is the consumption pro-focused. We want to much more consumption. Our region, industry, and consumption wants the result, that is H, that is health and happiness. So that is the healthcare, education, environment, quality of life, social justice. That is, so many cities in China, they have some evaluation about happiness for the city. Now comes to the strategic emerging industries. We can find in the 12th five-year plan, China focused on seven industries. These seven industries are so-called strategic emerging industries. For example, the energy efficiency, environmental protection, and next generation of information technology, and biotechnology, high-end manufacturing, and new energy, new materials, new energy automobile. Where are these industries are so-called strategic emerging industries? Because they are important to industrial upgrades, because they show promise in terms of market demand, because they are potential exports platform. There are also some plan about the development of strategic emerging industries. In the year 2015, this value-added industry output will account for almost 80% of the national GDP. And in the year 2020, we aim to realize 15% contributes from the strategic emerging industries. That means a lot of investments were in these strategic emerging industries. This is the table shows the expected investment. For example, energy efficiency and the environment protection needs RMB 3 trillion expected investment. Government may have some investment, but they are just a leading investment. Most of the investment are from the business environment. But still, uncertainties exist. We can find the technology and R&D uncertainties. We can find some sectors may lack of capital funding, although that means business opportunities. And we can find some business model also have uncertainties. And also a wave of copycats. Many provinces or many cities, they may be focused on the same industry. They have the possibility of over competition. And also we can find the uncertainties from the incentives and the subsidies implementation, maybe lack of follow through. There also have some lessons from some industries. We can find if industry relies too much on the subsidies from the government, This kind of industry is a fragile, and it will be influenced a lot if some policy changes. So what are the implications for enterprises? SOEs, these state-owned enterprises, wants to increase its commercial viability by consolidating market share, by improving operation efficiency, by improving its competitiveness, especially in the field of oil, gas, coal, iron, steel, power, utility, aviation, finance, telecom. We can find that multinational companies is now entering into a new norm environment. Multinational companies in China, they are used to enjoy the special preferential policies. But after China entered into the WTO, these kind of special policies are fading out. So these multinational companies, they are under the pressure to reduce investment in overcapacity industry. They have to focus on high-tech sectors and high-end services. And also private enterprises can take the advantage of deregulation. They can flow to the high-tech industry. And there are other some new trends and focus that is have the that is so-called inclusive innovation. This government commitment to address disparity, inclusive growth strategy outlined by President Hu Jintao in the year 2010, inclusive growth strategy aimed at reducing poverty, narrowing rural-urban income gap, and promoting equal access to basic social services. So, in the year 12th five-year plan, marks a shift from pursuing economic growth to sharing the benefits of development by its own people. This is a great transition. So, numerous programs are implemented to broaden access to basic public services for the disadvantaged, such as social protection, health service, education, finance, transportation, infrastructure, and also agriculture. So, inclusive innovation means getting more performance for less cost for more people. And inclusive innovation means try to develop innovative solutions for the benefit of those so-called excluded because of the reason of income, location, age, gender, disability, migration, ethnicity. So inclusive innovation tries to improve the access to basic services. Inclusive innovation tries to improve the quality of life. And the inclusive innovation does not only mean the sophisticated R&D. High-tech, low-tech, or even no-tech innovation are also preferred. So the key to success is how to meet the rising aspiration by providing affordable access. For example, those people, so-called HAPs, they can use BEVs as their transportation vehicles. And those people who called have-nots, they can use bicycle as their transportation vehicles. And those people have not, they can upgrade their transportation vehicles. They can use motor bicycle. But there are six people in one bicycle. So can we reduce the price and improve the performance? We can provide some products for these so-called have-nots. This kind of car have already is produced in Jiangsu province in China. This car is a low cost of transportation produced by Shandong province. It is also a new energy automobile. This have an innovation alliance with almost 60 companies. And they can produce 100,000 cars per year. This car only charges, the price of this car is only $5,000. It can drive 8 kilometers an hour, and we can drive this car 150 kilometers with one charge. And also some other successful cases. We can find this is the low-cost healthcare, the so-called Haiyun project, which is implemented by China Academy of Science which is the China Academy of Science, is also part of the is a central financed research institutions. China Academy of Science, they led the project, and now they have successfully developed 94 medical equipments and have already covered a benefit 30 million people. There's an example. This is a multifunctional diagnosis table. This multifunctional diagnosis table innovatively integrates diverse healthcare checks into one bed, including blood pressure, fetal heart monitor, electrocardiogram, and also blood routine, also ultrasonic. All these kind of checks are integrated into one bed. Can you imagine the price of this multifunctional diagnosis table? Can you imagine the price of this table? Just a guess.
$1,000.
Oh, you are expect much. The price of this this table is $5,000. $5,000. It is widely used in rural areas. So, inclusive innovation is a win-win business model. It is not only charity. It can be on one side, that is, some companies can foster their industry competitiveness. On the other hand, it increases the quality of life of the excluded. So this is inclusive innovation. How to making the plan work? Although in the year 2012, we can find the world economic situation is complicated, and the European sovereign debt crisis worsened again, and the United States Federal Reserve announced its third round of quantitative easing. So all this increased the global hedge emotion. Well, how can Canada companies seize the opportunities? We can find the crisis and the opportunities are the two sides of one coin. So current operating conditions are still excellent, at least in China. Although we will face a fierce competition, and not all Canada companies will succeed in a given sector, but we still have some operating strategies. If we can align with the government, if we try to move up in better chain, if we adjust our business model, which can more adaptable to the Chinese market, we can find Chinese companies, they have advantage in these kind of fields, this kind of that is the labor intensive and also capital intensive and also technology intensive and also not very profitable. This kind of fields is many Chinese companies, they have their advantage. So we can choose our own blue sea. Just like Premier Wen Jiabao said, we must be fully mindful of potential dangers and keep a cool head. At the same time, we should have firm confidence. Confidence is like the sun. It brings us brightness and hope. So that's all of my presentation. Thank you.